Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. The Chase Brock Experience is a Brooklyn-based contemporary dance company led by choreographer Chase Brock. They will perform at PS21 as part of the Chatham Dance Festival at 8 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Chase Brock is an acclaimed choreographer working in theater, modern dance, ballet, opera, television, and video games. He joined us along with Obie and four-time Tony Award-winning lighting designer Kevin Adams. Adams has worked extensively on Broadway, winning his Tony Awards for The 39 Steps, the original production of Spring Awakening, American Idiot, and Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Kevin Adams has designed the lighting for Chase Brock's The Song I Sing, or Meow So Pretty, one of four pieces being performed at PS21 this week. Chase Brock and Kevin Adams, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks, Sarah. Thank
you. When did you discover dance and know you wanted to be a dancer, performer, or choreographer?
I saw my cousin Brianna's dance recital when I was 5 years old, and I immediately said, I have to be on the stage, and I threw a fit. And I literally demanded that at the end of the performance, my parents take me and lift me up onto the stage. And then I asked for dance lessons, and my mom and dad granted them to me that fall. And that was it from the time I was six.
I should know this, but where did you grow up?
I grew up near Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay, beautiful community.
It is gorgeous. I appreciate it so much now.
Sure.
All I wanted to do was get out then. I wanted to come to New York.
And you did.
And I did.
Who were some of the people that, as you learned more about your craft, you looked up to? And then who did you try to work with as you came up?
Anne Reinking was actually a really early mentor of mine. She had a summer program in Florida called Broadway Theater Project. And when I was 13 and 14, I studied there. And she really treated the students as professionals. She sort of didn't see a line between being a teenage musical theater apprentice and being a Broadway cast member. And so she kind of invited everybody to step up their game. And also the guests there were people like Stanley Donen, who directed the movie Singin' in the Rain and American in Paris. People like Pat Birch, who choreographed the movie Grease. Tommy Toon. So we just had access to great, great directors and choreographers. And I ultimately was more inspired by that than the material they were teaching us to perform.
And how do you know, as you become who you are, what you want to work on? You work on Broadway, you also choreograph for opera, and you have your company. How does all of that kind of fall into place? How does the deck shuffle together?
I mean, it's interesting. I've been kind of doing all this for about 17 years, and I've had the company for 10 years next spring. And so it just shuffles itself. There's been times that I've said, oh, I'm going to focus on this theater for right now, or I'm going to focus on the dance company and spend 2 years really doing that. But then ultimately life intervenes and you end up doing what you end up doing. And I think the thing I've really learned is that I like the mix of doing all of it. And I think I would get bored doing any one thing. Like by the time we're done with a tour with my company, all I want is to be in a theater with actors and collaborators. On the other hand, at the end of working for 6 weeks on a play with movement, all I want is like eight of the best dancers I can find to create something for. So I think the different areas feed each other.
You choreographed Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark on Broadway, which I'm sure everyone asks you about, because if you don't know anything about that show, you know that the getting it to the stage was riddled with complications. Ultimately, do you walk away with it in your rear view, feeling good about the experience?
Absolutely. I think Spider-Man fulfilled a lot of things that I value. Like, I love the idea of making theater available to a mass audience. I love the idea of theater that transcends culture and language. I love the idea of theater that the whole family can come to, that doesn't talk down to the audience. And I thought the idea that we introduced, what is it, you know, however many millions of folks perhaps to theater for the first time was such a cool thing. And so many young kids, and particularly young boys who don't always have that show, you know, it may not be Matilda, it may not be Annie or those sorts of shows. So that was exciting to sort of be part of something like that, that felt like it was reaching beyond the theater audience, who I love so much, but reaching into a larger sort of culture and tapping those people who might not have chosen Spider-Man out of, do I see Matilda? Do I see Lion King? Do I see Newsies? Do I see Spider-Man? But they were actually like, what am I going to do in New York? Maybe we'll see Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting.
You also have another fairly unique, I think, credit in that you've choreographed for video games. How does that come about? How does that work?
That came about one day. My agent at the time called and said, there's a video game studio who made a game called, and at that time it was the game Just Dance, but it hadn't come out yet. And so she said, it's going to be called Dance or Just Dance or something like that. And they are wanting to do a Broadway edition. And they saw your website and your material, and would you come in? And I was like, well, I had a Super Nintendo in the 90s, but I don't really know a lot about video games. And she sort of said, you know a lot about Broadway, and that's what they need. They will tell you all the stuff about video games. And so I thought, okay, yeah, maybe I can do this job. And I went in and had such a creative, interesting meeting. The video game world is so young. Like, the oldest person in the entire company was like 29. And most of the animators who I worked with were 18 to 25. So it was really energetic and crackling and creative. And the key thing that they kept saying to me in those early meetings were, how would you do this? How would you go about creating a big production number that we will then animate and turn into a player experience? And I kept saying, well, I don't know. How have you guys done it before? And they were like, no, it doesn't matter how we did it before. What would you do? And the invitation to really like iterate towards something of our own was very, very compelling. And so that actually was one of my favorite projects, and a real brain teaser in terms of balancing consumer playability right out of the box, audience enjoyment, fun level, energy and sort of health level and physical questions about, is it too demanding? Is it demanding enough? Is it, what age group is this right for? And then staying true to the Broadway shows we were honoring and the original ideas of those, while also making it fun for an animated look, which is more heightened than in real life. So it was a very interesting job.
Yeah, it sounds great. And in the commercial for the game is funny because, of course, the people playing in the commercial are dancers.
That's right.
And you're like, well, that's nice. I'm not going to look like that yes. in my living room, but I should still give yes. it a go.
Yes, I wasn't involved in the commercial for the Wii version, but I did get to actually go choreograph the commercial for the PlayStation version. And it was very interesting figuring out like how you do create a commercial that looks good enough in terms of what people are doing that you're like, oh, I could be a Broadway dancer in my living room, but that isn't intimidating for right. the folks you want. And intriguingly, I will say, the games were not a big hit in the US, but in the UK, Dance on Broadway is a phenomenon. And you can look on YouTube and there's video after video of British folks dancing along to that. And so I'm so happy that they loved it. We're too embarrassed, I think, in America to get behind it, but they seem to enjoy a bit of campy showbiz pizzazz.
Good. We should bring that back.
Yes, I agree.
Kevin Adams, lighting designer, is also here. We greeted him and then ignored him for a number of minutes. How did you discover the stage? Your degrees, if I did my research right, are in scenic design,
yeah,
but you
right.
work as a lighting designer. Do you have to know the scenery to do the lights?
It helps. I mean, I trained to be a set designer. I went to undergrad and grad school, and I was a very dedicated set designer and art director and production designer. And I never studied lighting and never had any interest in lighting. And I really just kind of fell into it. But I think a lot of what I do in the way I make pictures is related to a kind of full stage, scenic point of view and the way I light. Which is nice to do dance because it's so stripped down. It's often just figures in space. So it's a nice, a different kind of set of muscles to flex. It's nice.
How on top of technology, lighting technology, changes in bulbs, wattage, availability, things I don't actually know about, as is evidenced by the way I'm asking this question. But how on top of that do you have to stay? And is it fun to learn the new things you can do?
Yeah, I mean, it's changing like weekly. There's so many new energy efficient things that are coming out, like LEDs and other kinds of things like that. And those are, you can see those things in small ways, or like just little tiny decorative blips of lights, or there are like really large moving lights that also contain those things. But all that stuff is changing daily. You could consume your time with like trying to figure all that stuff out and chasing that down. In New York, we're kind of limited to what the shops will buy, so it's the sky really isn't the limit. A lot of what I did in my lighting and how I got into it was by sort of going low-tech and finding stuff that I would find like in Home Depot and Lowe's, or like light bulbs and fluorescent tubes and things like that. So I kind of explored the other side of all of that for years, and And by the time I got to doing larger musicals and things, I really hadn't had a lot of experience with moving lights and sort of more complicated stuff. And I had to do a lot of homework. I had a lot of catch up to do to explore the other tech side.
Who do you work with most as a lighting designer when you're doing a musical?
It's nice you work with an entire team. There's a director and a set designer and a writer and a choreographer. It really is a collaboration. All those people have different points of view and different ideas and accept different ideas. And the writers do and producers do. And it really is a really big group of people that make a show. And it's a big group of people that I make shows with.
How did you two meet and collaborate on this piece?
Oh, you know, we met on Instagram.
It was true.
I haven't met many people I didn't know on Instagram, but we kind of knew of each other, I believe. And we really dug each other's personal style. We both wear brightly colored, mixed pattern clothing. And also in our homes, there's all kinds of brightly colored funny objects, and I really liked the stuff he was posting, and he really liked the things I was posting, and we figured like we should meet, and we went on a shopping date. We went to look at these art clothes at Dover Market in New York and had a really fun shopping looking adventure. And soon after he said, "Oh, I'm going to do this thing," and I said, "Great." I liked him. And it was like that.
That's great. It was so generous of him to, you know, we like went shopping together for an afternoon. We were like, oh, this is cool. I like you. We like the same stuff. And it's a more interesting way to meet someone, I think, than like having a coffee date or something. It was fun. Uh-huh. That we were like touching clothes and like
looking at things together.
And then so sweet. I was like, you want to come down and light this thing for $2 for me downtown? And he was like so game and was like, yeah, I will come do that on the day of my Tony luncheon, I think, for Hedwig.
Yeah, uptown, downtown.
Yeah, it was really lovely. But it was inspiring to think someone at that level is not closing off an interesting collaboration that might be on the very, very low end budget side of the scale.
I wanted to do it. I wanted to work at La Mama also. And also he played me those songs and I just so liked all those songs, new Christy minstrel songs. I was crazy for all those things together. I couldn't resist.
The piece is "The Song That I Sing" or "Meow So Pretty." Tell us a little bit more about it, if you
can. I think that it's proposing a kind of, we'll say, Williamsburg patriotism. It's a sort of very, very optimistic piece, very American piece, we're using songs by the amazing folk vocal ensemble, the New Christy Minstrels. If you don't know of them, you should check them out. And if you have seen the movie A Mighty Wind, they are parodied in that movie as the New Main Street Singers. But their work, I think, was enjoyed so much in its time, and I don't know how many sort of folks today still listen to them, but they're excellent. And it transcends time and place, and it is still really resonant, interesting, emotional recordings and songs. And so I heard one of their songs. I heard the song "Today" that came on my like Apple Music.
Today, while the blossoms still cling to the vine, I'll taste your strawberries, I'll drink your sweet wine. A million tomorrows shall all pass away, ere I forget all the joy that is mine today.
And I stopped in my tracks and said, I have to make a dance with this. And that doesn't happen all that often, that something feels that urgent. And then it became basically the next dance I made. And I wrote to the founder of the group, Randy Sparks, who, and I said, I'm crazy about your songs. Would you be willing to let us possibly dance to them for a small festival downtown? And, or actually, no, I'm sorry, I didn't write him. I just wrote their website address. And then the founder of the group, Randy Sparks himself, wrote me and was so lovely and generous and said, you know, we made music to be celebrated and to be heard. And we love supporting young people, and sent me information on the New Christy Minstrels Foundation and said, yes, you know, use the songs. And that was really the jumping off point. But the piece uses a lot of kind of American vernacular dance. There is tap dance in it. This is all done in like Converse sneakers, but right. There's tap dance. There's clogging. We actually have step dance, an Irish step dance in it. There's hip hop. There's finger tutting. There's digits work. There's liquid. There's jazz. I mean, it really is this big range of stuff. That all came out of the songs, as Kevin said.
And how many songs? There's like 8 or 9 songs?
Is that yeah, it's 9 right? songs, I believe. Nope, I lied. It's 12. It's 12 movements. Yeah, it's 30 minutes long.
And is the lighting uniform throughout, or does it change for each song?
It shifts. I made these little light bulb things that sit on the floor between the spectator and the performers, and they have these amber compact fluorescent bulbs in them that not only light the performers as footlights, but they also light the spectators, and they also light the entire space. They put a nice relief. They put a nice amber glow around the entire mm-hmm. space, and they sort of bring everyone in that space together in the same way that the optimism of those songs do.
When I first asked Kevin to design it, one of the things I love about your work, I don't know if I've exactly said this to you, is both what it obviously looks like in the air and what the sort of composition of the light is, but also the objects and the composition of those objects are part of it. Feels like you're doing both of those things in a way that I don't think anybody else is quite doing. And I of course never said to you, like, you have to put some sort of electric object on stage, but I sort of secretly hoped that you might.
Yeah, I knew.
And it was cool that you did do that, because I think I've seen such variation in the way you've harnessed and used all those kinds of lights. And you found such a range of ways to use those objects. And we use them in this piece in a way that I had never seen in anything else I've seen of yours that you've designed. But it still has kind of that iconic look of your work. So really happy that you went to Home Depot and Lowe's and made these amazing footlights for us.
I did. I made them myself.
He did. He was like texting me, being like, I just found the cages and they're $1.99 and I'm going to go across town. And it was so lovely.
That was fun.
It was lovely.
The song I Sing or Meow So Pretty is being performed along with 3 other pieces at PS21 in Chatham on Friday and Saturday nights. We only have a little bit of time left. Could you tell us about the other 3 pieces, like in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, one piece is called Mission Implausible. It's a 12-minute comic romp through an instrumental score we commissioned by Josh Rosenblum. It feels kind of like a Warner Brothers cartoon come to life. Another piece is called Woe Nelly, and this piece is to Nellie Mackay's album Obligatory Villagers. Nellie and I became friends, and I asked her if we could choreograph an entire album of hers, and she said yes. Rolling Stone had said, that album is like the greatest musical you'll never see. I was determined to prove them wrong. It's now on stage. And the other piece is one of our newest dances. It's called Splendor We Only Partially Imagined, the title of which comes from a fragment in Patti Smith's book, Just Kids. And the music is Kishi Bashi, and it's 4 movements, about 15 minutes long. And that's the most kind of meditative, tribal, tranquil piece on the program. So it stands in contrast to some of the comedy and hijinks of the other works.
PS21chatham.org for more information. The Chase Brock Experience performing Friday and Saturday nights at 8 p.m. This has been so much fun, you guys. Thank you for coming
sure,
in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah.
The Chase Brock Experience will perform at PS21 in Chatham, New York as part of the Chatham Dance Festival at 8 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. PS21chatham.org for ticket information. That link is posted, along with this interview and links to Chase Brock's and Kevin Adams' websites at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Oh, catch a mountain.